You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast.
This DIY feature is proudly sponsored by Paintsmiths Long Beach. Service and knowledge with pleasure.
I visit Paintsmiths for all things paint and revamp.
I visit Paintsmiths for trade and paint contractor advice.
And we are here for each individual or business in the valley. Service and knowledge with pleasure. Paintsmiths Long Beach. Bulalo Drive, Sunnydale.
It's 10:30 and time for the DIY feature with Patrick Condoran, Plumbing CC. Good morning, Patrick, and welcome back. It's been a very long time, but welcome back.
Good morning, Jeannie Sue. Thanks for having me here.
Only a pleasure. So our topic this morning.
Plumbing.
Plumbing, and plumbing.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick, I know there are many plumbers in our valley, as you know, many, many plumbers, you know, and I believe there is so much work that you don't have to kind of compete against each other either, because there's enough for each and every one of you in this valley to carry.
It's quite true. There is more than enough work to go around, not only in the valley, but extending through to the southern suburbs. Hell of a lot of plumbers, but a hell of a lot of work, which is obviously a very good sign.
Yes.
Yeah.
And talking about sign, I mean, we're talking about it's about me, so my household.
Yes.
Which I'm going to ask you actually a question now, which I'm hoping might have to call you in. We flush a toilet.
Yeah.
And then it sort of flushes back. So it takes a while. It flushes and then
rises up in the bowl.
And then it flushes again.
It flushes by itself.
Yes, it kind of just does its own thing. You flush it, and then you just hear, and it comes up. So,
well, if it's coming up in the toilet system, you've probably got a faulty inlet valve, which you'll want to either service or replace. If it's coming up in the bowl, you're probably going to run out of the bathroom very fast.
But it's not coming right out. Do you know what I mean? It's not flooding. If you know what I mean,
it's just dribbling into the bowl. It's running into the bowl the whole time.
It's like you walk out.
Yes.
Now you flushed. You walked out, and then it does it again. I don't know why.
Yeah.
So I thought this was a perfect question to start off with as a DIY person myself.
Yeah. If it's one of the more modern day inlet valves, it's not all that common, but it does happen. And again, it's probably a little bit of muck inside the valve that's going to be cleaned out. But if all else fails, just replace it. They're not overly expensive.
Right. So
you'll be fine.
So before I get you out, what can I do? I don't want to mess it up either, because at the end of the day, it's going to be a bigger job for you.
Yeah, again, depending on how modern the system is.
So it's not an old system. It's not about 4 years, 5 years, maybe 6 years old.
There's going to be a little isolation valve next to the toilet. So if all else fails, just turn that off in the meantime. Familiarize yourself with that valve first before you start fiddling around, because it's not just a question of stripping the thing apart willy-nilly. You want to isolate the water mains feed to that part first.
Yes.
Lest you have a flooded house. Once you're comfortable with that, well, if you can turn the water off, then go for it. Then just try and strip the thing apart. They're usually pretty basic, especially the older ones. You mentioned that yours is perhaps an older.
Yeah, it's about 5 years. It's about 5 year old system. But maybe you should come. Maybe you should come and listen,
sure.
Because I myself have never. I said to my man, I said, "Now what's that?"
Yes.
He says, "Well, that's new."
Yeah,
what I mean, it's just like working on its own.
I suppose a little bit irritating, especially if it's like your main ensuite bathroom and you're trying to snooze.
Yeah. No, this is the kind of the guest bathroom, but everybody. Okay. Use it. The house is always pretty
cool. Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah, well, give us a shot.
Yes,
we'll pop across and
I'm interested to know, do we need a whole new setup or can things be replaced?
I doubt it. Like I said, it'll be cleaning or replacing just the part, and that'll be it. Yeah.
All right.
Very basic.
Now let's go to showers.
Mm.
I think it's so important. I mean, showers can also get blocked.
Yeah, of course.
And then you've got you've got the drain covers, which is, and it's open, but it's screwed.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah.
Why have they done that? Because
why they screwed it closed?
But what I'm saying is why with the screw? Because now this happens, something's broken, and you need to get a screwdriver yourself and you've got to unscrew this whole thing.
If I think about it, most of the more modern shower traps, so they've got like sort of a square profile stainless steel plate.
Yes.
And it's quite easy to get it off with a screwdriver. They don't have screws per se, but you just sort of basically pop it off with a screwdriver.
Yes.
And then depending on the design, you can basically strip the guts out of the shower trap And just shove a garden hose pipe down there and blast it out.
Yeah,
I'm talking sort of DIY for the layman.
Yes.
You know, plumbers might come in there with sort of, you know, plungers and things like that. The first thing you actually want to do is check outside of the drain and see if the gully drain itself is blocked up.
So what do we do if that is the case? The outside gully is blocked.
So most gully drains have got a grid covering them, and you want to make sure that that grid isn't covered with the, you know, leaves and muck and just general debris that might blow in there from time to time. If that drain is clear and running freely, then you'll know that the blockage is more localized to the actual shower trap itself. And then, okay. Then again, depending on the design, some of the newer ones, you can strip them apart. Very easy for a homeowner to do. Simple. With the older ones, a good old-fashioned plunger should do the trick. If it's solidly blocked, you can introduce a little bit of sulfuric acid or something like that. But you can also buy at the local hardware store. But just be careful with that, because when you introduce the acid to the water, there's a reaction.
Yes.
And it can spit back.
Oh,
and
boy.
You don't want to play around with that too much. So just tread lightly if you're going to go that route. Otherwise, again, call the plumber.
Yes.
As you sort of rightly pointed out, there's plenty of us around.
Yes, plenty. But I think you need to come and visit the house. Going to be entertained.
Trust me, we've seen it all. Eh?
Different strengths of shower. Different strengths of showers.
Yeah.
You've got a strong, what is the cause of that? Sometimes you can put on your taps and that, and it really gives you a good, what do you call it?
A good pressure.
That's what the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Pressure.
Yeah.
So you get a good pressure. Then sometimes it's not such a, you know, then it's like weaker. What is that?
Well, there's various reasons why you might have weak pressure at a shower. We often come across cases where clients call us in and they say, you know, my Tyler's brother remodeled a bathroom recently, and really, I always think, well, why didn't you call the plumber in the first place? But nevertheless, you walk into this house, the bathroom looks absolutely pristine, but you open up the tap
and it drips.
The water just drips out, you know, and they've made this wonderful renovation, and you jump up into the roof space, and they've got one of these old gravity-type geysers up there, which is just, I mean, they're not designed for single-lever mixers and high pressure and large format shower hoses and whatnot. So that's one of the first things you'll check is the pressure of the geyser. And then it can be as simple also, I mean, they've usually got like a little strainer inside the shower rows, between the rows and the arm that comes out the wall. And it's very common for that thing to get mucked up with, sand and debris and lime scale in the older houses and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, whenever council work on the pipes, muck comes through the system, and again, it gets stuck at your aerators. And we mentioned the toilet inlet valves earlier on, inside your geyser, pressure valves and whatnot. These will all have a direct bearing on the pressure at the end of the day.
All right. Yeah. So could you break it down for us? Now, someone wants to renovate their bathroom and they chop in the bathroom up.
Yeah.
And you are going to,
Well, look, you know, ideally you're always going to want to use a registered, suitably qualified plumber to do work like that.
Yes.
They've got to understand pressures. They've got to understand, you know, volume and flow rate and that type of thing. The very first thing you'll check is the source of the pressure. You'll check the hot water cylinder, see if it's a low pressure, like 100 kilopascal or 200 kilopascal, and then just chat to the client and see what their vision is, and look around the house and see if it's an ultra modern house or if the house is 60 years old, and you know whether they want single lever mixers in their showers and basins and whatnot, as opposed to the two tap configuration.
Yes.
Certainly with your modern day single lever mixers, they're designed for, you know, modern day high pressure geysers with decent pressure.
Yeah.
If you haven't got that, well, then you've got to factor that into your budget as well when you're working at your costs.
So you start with the geyser first, because it sounds important with the way you're speaking at the moment.
To my mind, it's a solid point of departure. Check out the geyser, see what their hot water pressure is to begin with.
Is a geyser expensive to replace, though? Now, say that this person I knew, they want all these up-to-date things, and the geyser is sell-by-date. Is it expensive to replace?
I would say in the greater scheme of things, when you take into account your typical bathroom renovation, and so invariably there's going to be, you know, plumbing, tiling, waterproofing. You got to allow for your shower glass enclosure or screen or whatever the case might be. Painting, whatever. When you factor the whole, when you put everything together, to spend a little bit more money. Putting in a high pressure geyser is really money well spent. And I would say if you can't afford the geyser, rather to save a little bit longer and do a renovation in, you know, 6 months down the line type of thing.
Yes.
Rather than do it at, and be sort of, you know, you're unhappy with the result.
That's right. Because I know many homes, you've got the different pressures, and that's, this is probably the problem because you've got an aged home.
Yeah, again, we come across it, you know. A husband and wife, and you know, the wife wanted to redo the bathroom for years and years and years. Eventually, she's got her dream bathroom, but again, you open up that hot tap and the water just trickles out. You know, that's just terrible.
So, what happens in that case now? Everything, the tiles and everything, it's a beautiful bathroom. So, what do you do now? Do you have to break the tiles?
Well, again, if a suitably qualified plumber has done the job, he would have done it properly. We hope he would have. Balance the water pressure so hot and cold will be equal. If you've got balanced pressure with a lowish pressure geyser like 100 kilopascal, that's not the end of the world. We don't have to chop off all your tiles to redo the bathroom and retube. That's not going to be necessary.
Yes.
Then it's a simple question of replacing a 100 or 200 kilopascal pressure geyser with a 400 or 600 kilopascal pressure. You're not touching the bathroom whatsoever, and that will improve the pressure.
All right.
So it shouldn't be a problem. If however they have not balanced the hot and cold pressure, so say for example, again, you've got that gravity geyser, which is just gravity pressure on the hot, and your cold water, especially in your older houses, is unbalanced, that is a little bit more nuanced. It's a little bit more difficult than to retro balance that pressure. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it involves a little bit of work.
Yeah, because then you're going to have to take the tile off, and that's not necessary that it's going to stay like that.
Yeah, there's more than one way of going about it. You can also put a pressure regulating valve on the incoming cold water pressure outside.
Okay.
But again, it's going to differ from household to household. It's not a sort of one size fits all.
I know, not as you said, if you are registered plumber, you wouldn't do this type of thing. But what happens if you get the thing, because you've got a male and a female? A male and a female, what do you call it?
Connectors. Yeah, sure.
And you get it mixed up. Because that has happened.
Well, yeah, you can't really mix up your male and female connectors. I mean, those are thread sizes and whatnot.
But that's if you're a plumber.
Even for a layperson, you're not going to get that mixed up. What does sometimes happen is people get the we've come across this as well. Person says, "I don't know what happens. I had my bathroom renovated. Every time I flush the toilet, steam comes out.
Hot water. That's exactly
what it happens. It happens.
What happened there?
Well, again, it depends. If the pressure is balanced and it all comes from the roof space down, well, then you can just swap the pipes in the roof space.
Yes.
If not, we have had cases where you've got to roll up your sleeves and start chopping and reading pipework and whatnot.
And there again, now you've finished this beautiful bathroom, and this is incorrect. And that is damage control. That is definitely damage control. Yeah.
But bottom line, get yourself two or three quotes for every, renovation type of project. And then check the credentials of the people that are supplying these quotes to you as well. Make sure that they've been around for a while and they're suitably qualified, licensed and registered with the City of Cape Town. And if it's apples for apples, well then...
That's it. Because you also need a CSE for plumbing.
Yeah, you've got to get a CSE for plumbing, more especially for your geyser replacements, before the insurance company is going to pay you out. They want a certificate of compliance.
Right.
We're talking about a City of Cape Town certificate of compliance on completion.
Now there's so many different brands of geysers nowadays. Which is your preferred one?
I'm sort of quite old school. I really like copper. Yes. I like copper piping. I like copper geysers.
Weren't they supposed to change all that? Wasn't copper supposed to be changed for something else now?
No, back in the day, it was basically copper or else that cheap, nasty plastic orange polycopper piping. These days, there's more variety with the introduction of composite multi-layer pipes and what they call PEX piping, which is sort of a memory pipe system. There's some very, really, really good composite pipes out there. So that's an advantage, I think, to the industry because, of course, copper is very expensive and there's high theft value, and it's not uncommon for, some of our large-scale construction projects or new builds or developments and whatnot, You've tubed out the bathroom beautifully in copper, and you come back on the Monday morning, and it's all been ripped out. Yes. So that's a real factor. Whereas with composite piping, that's not even a consideration.
Yes. How does one know when your geyser's going to start packing up? What signs as a normal household, you know, family member?
So members? I suppose it's like anything, you know, maintenance is key. If you have your average modern day high pressure steel geyser as opposed to your fiberglass geysers and your copper geysers, they have what's called an aluminium anode inside the geyser. Now, that is effectively the anti-corrosion device, and that's got to be changed. Well, the manufacturers recommend you change it every 2 years, depending on the quality of the water. So most people have no idea about this, or they're on their fourth geyser, and they say, wow, why didn't the previous plumbers mention this to me?
Yes.
I don't really know why plumbers don't sort of upskill their clients, but certainly that's a factor. Change your anode every 2 years. It'll certainly lengthen the lifespan of your geyser.
I've learned something now. I didn't know that.
It's relevant. No. Yeah. And if you haven't been maintaining the geyser, you haven't been changing that anode, what will happen is sooner or later the first manifestation will be getting sort of brownish water coming out your hot taps.
Really? So that's a sign, brown water out of taps.
Typically. I'm not saying first thing in the morning with brown sometimes. I notice that sometimes at my office building, mornings runs brown just for a couple of seconds and then it clears.
Yes.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a consistent brown murky water on the hot water side. And that's quite literally...
And that's a sign.
It's corrosion from within the geyser.
Okay.
And that's often a little bit of a gray area. The insurance companies are very reluctant to pay out to replace a geyser that's corroding because technically speaking, it hasn't burst. And when you talk about burst pipes and burst geysers, that's the insurance language. They're comfortable with that.
Yes, because they do come and assess it, and sometimes
they come and assess, sometimes they don't. Yeah. But effectively, if you say, well, we want to replace your geyser because it's starting to corrode from within, the insurance companies battle a little bit with that. That's a bit of a gray area for them.
Yeah, I think, Patrick, many of us do not know about that maintenance.
Sure.
And it's the first time I've heard it. I'm only a female, but,
No, it's not even about that. It's a question of, as I say, plumbers upskilling their client base.
And that's, I know lots of listeners are listening.
Yeah.
We've got something, a question here.
Yeah.
Good morning, Rory. How are you? So Rory says, hello. So we have a pine tree growing close to the sewer plastic pipes, and the roots are continually having to be removed manually by them. He says he knows in America there's a chemical that foams up in the pipes and discourages the roots from returning. What do we have here that can do the same? He says, I sprinkle above the near surface pipes to discourage growth, regrowth.
So,
thanks, Rory.
Yeah, look, off the top of my head, I can't think of any solvent that you could put down the lines that's going to effectively keep the roots at bay. The thing to remember is, once you have a root ingress into the sewer pipes, even if there was some kind of an acid that could get rid of them, it's only going to be a temporary measure because once the roots get into the sewer line, I'm sure you can imagine the conditions couldn't be better for growth. I mean, it's perfect. So I'm very much in favor of actually cutting out that root infested section of sewer line and replacing it with new PVC piping. But having said that, that's quite simple. If it's a piece of sewer pipe running in the garden and it's not too much of a mission to get to that pipe, then you can dig down and you can replace it quite simply. But if it's under concrete or under a tiled patio or whatever the case, it can sometimes be a little bit more difficult to do that. And in cases like that, there are companies, you know, we don't personally do it, but there are companies around that'll do actual pipe relining. So they'll reline the sewer pipes. Typically, they unblock the line as best they can, maybe do a bit of jet blasting, stick a camera down the line, and then give you a quote to reline that section of piping. And that'll actually, in my opinion, that'll be an effective solution for those roots.
Instead of using chemicals.
So there you have two options that are open to you.
All right. So, Rory, I hope that answers your question, and thank you. Right, so let's get back to our geysers, because this is, as you notice, I'm very absorbed right now.
Yeah.
So we call out a leaking when water's running from the outside.
Yeah.
Is that also a sign that your geyser is going?
So it depends. When it comes to the installation of geysers or your typical high-pressure geyser in this country, there's a code. It's called SANS 10254. Used to be South African Bureau of Standards, now it's South African National Standards. Code 10254 relates specifically to the installation of high-pressure geysers in this country. And if you have your average household, little single-story house, the geyser's usually up in the roof space, you should have three overflow pipes going to the outside. The smallest one will be attached to what they call the pressure regulating valve or the pressure reducing valve. Now, that valve handles, amongst other things, expansion relief. So when you're heating any body of water, if you think of your kettle, you flip the switch, steam comes up the top.
Yeah.
That's simply the water molecules expanding through the heating process. And your geyser is exactly the same.
Okay.
Now, that particular pipe will drip. Look, it depends on the size of the geyser and your hot water usage throughout the day. It might drip anywhere between 5 and, say, 9 liters per 24-hour cycle.
Okay.
And that's completely normal. It's expected and it's supposed to do that. So that would usually just drip over the flower bed or whatever the case might be. And that's usually a 15-millimeter diameter pipe. Your next pipe is usually either a 22-millimeter or a 28-millimeter copper overflow pipe. And that's attached to what they call the temperature and pressure safety valve, which is effectively almost like an emergency valve. So, for example, if your thermostat fails and that water starts boiling and overheating inside the geyser, that valve will open up to purge that hot water and bring the ambient temperature down within the geyser.
Okay.
It's a safety precaution. Right. That will belt out scalding hot water, typically, and you'll hear it. It'll sound like a Boeing aircraft warming up inside your roof space.
You get a shudder as well with that. It's like a...
not so much of a shudder, but it means business when it opens up.
Yes.
So you don't want that discharging over sort of a walkway or a doorway or anything like that, because it can harm people, obviously, scalding hot water. And then the third overflow pipe is usually either a 40 or 50 millimeter PVC pipe, and that's attached to the drip tray of the geyser. If water's coming out of that, more often than not, your geyser has expired.
It's past its
useful
So that's the important one for a general household, for family.
It's probably the most important. Going back to the smallest one, if it's dropping 24/7, there's a problem. Call a plumber. They'll come out and either clean that valve out or replace it.
Yes.
If the copper one is belting hot water out,
call a plumber.
You'll call your plumber. It's not really a DIY job, so you'll call your plumber. He'll replace usually that valve and the thermostat on the geyser. If the bigger one is dripping, 10-1, it's a burst geyser.
Call your insurance.
Well, no. Call your plumber first.
Okay.
Call your local registered plumber first. Let him come out and have a look at it, because if it's not a burst geyser, sometimes it might be one of the valves over the drip tray.
Okay.
For example, what we call the vacuum breakers. You have one on the hot side and one on the cold side.
Yes.
These are air intake valves on the geyser, and every high-pressure geyser has two of them. They don't last forever. Sometimes they start dribbling, and actually sometimes they spray as well. But they usually will drip into the tray, and then the tray will obviously drip to the outside through that 40 or 50-millimeter diameter pipe that we mentioned.
Yes.
So call your local registered plumber. Let them have a look at it first. It's not always a burst geyser. Sometimes it's just a question of replacing one of those vacuum breakers. If the geyser is burst, that same plumber is going to give you a quote to replace the geyser. You'll send that through to your insurance company.
Yes.
And then it depends on the insurer. It differs from one to the other. Some of them are nice and polite, and they'll say, okay, fine. We recognize that your plumber is licensed and registered to work within the greater city of Cape Town area. It's fine. He can go ahead and replace the geyser. There might be a shortfall. Say, for example, the plumber's quote is, say, whatever, 13,000 Rand.
Yeah.
You might find that, depending on your insurer, some of them will pay out. Look, some of them are actually ridiculous. Their price structure is stuck, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I guess it keeps them and their shareholders happy, but whatever.
Yes.
So some of them might pay you out 8,000 Rand. So then you've got a 5,000 Rand shortfall, plus you've got to factor in your excess.
Yes.
And we quite upfront with our clients. You know, we say to them, look, you know, if the shortfall is too great, we fully respect it. It's fine. Then go with your insurance company.
Yeah.
The difference between the insurance company versus your private plumber is your private plumber is going to walk away giving you a certificate of compliance stating that your geyser is fully compliant.
Yeah.
The insurance companies are not liable to – this sounds weird – they're not necessarily going to do a fully compliant installation, because they deem that to be an improvement to your property.
Yeah.
So they say, no, all they're going to do is they're going to remove the old geyser, put the new geyser in. That's it.
Yeah.
If you're missing overflows here and a valve there and whatnot, they don't trouble themselves too much with that. So, I think some of them will actually give you a little slip of paper just detailing, saying, listen, by the way, call your plumber back because he must now put in an XYZ to make you fully compliant.
Yeah. So this is a very, 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 very important chat that we're having right now about that, because I wouldn't know that. No. And you're quite right. You need the COC. You do need the COC.
You need the COC for your peace of mind, because you decide to sell your house in 2 or 3 years' time. You know, a lot of people say, oh, we can't believe it. The insurance company replaced like Giza. Now you're telling us it's not compliant. And we say, yeah, that's just it's the way it is. It's like crashing your Volkswagen Golf and expecting a BMW in return. The insurance doesn't work that way.
No, they don't.
So,
are you connected? Are you connected to insurance companies?
No, by choice.
So you're not on the panel?
By choice, we're not.
You're not.
By choice, we're not. Because honestly, I mean, some of these insurers are going to hate me for this, but I don't believe they pay a fair rate to replace the geysers, not to do it properly. Yeah. And we will only ever do a fully compliant installation.
If you do it yourself.
100%. Yeah. I mean, if a client were to say, okay, don't worry about this overflow and don't worry about that, I'll say, look, you know, then call another plumber. Yes. Not interested. Yeah.
But like you said, it's important. We need to know. That's why I've asked these questions. We need to know.
Yes.
You know, what signs do we look for? Yeah. You know, I didn't even know about the maintenance. Yeah. So I'm sure many of the listeners and along with me have learned something today. But let's go to the drip trays.
Yes, drip trays. Okay. Yeah.
Do you need? I know some geysers that I've known. Some haven't had a drip tray, and I believe a drip tray is very important to have. Why is some geysers they haven't connected a drip tray to?
So, well, that SANS 102.5.4 code that I alluded to earlier on, it basically states more or less along the lines of wherever a burst geyser can cause damage to property, water damage to property, you need to have a drip tray underneath it. So, for example, if the geyser's on the roof, you think of the long lines of some of the solar geysers, for example, clearly you don't need a drip tray. If it's inside a garage and there's a step up from the garage going into the house and it's a very basic rudimentary garage, well, you can get away with not putting in a drip tray because it can't cause any effective damage. But then there are cases where people have, for example, photovoltaic equipment and all this these deep cycle batteries and whatnot set up inside their garage and there's a geyser sitting above it. Well, clearly, you know, either relocate the geyser and or put a drip tray underneath it. It's not a big deal. A drip tray is relatively inexpensive in the grander scheme of things. And you know what? If in doubt, put in a drip tray.
Yeah, it's about safety, isn't it?
Just add a peace of mind.
That's what I've asked. You know, some don't and some do. And I just thought, how important is it? And you've just answered that question.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to tell? Tell us something funny that you've come across. Because you sure must come across some funny things.
Yeah, well, the funniest situation that comes to mind was a situation in Newark, and this is going back, 20-plus years, 25, 26 years ago, and it's myself and my assistant back in the day, and they called us in for a blockage, and I had the father on the one side saying, what is the blockage, what is the blockage, and we were looking at this massive whack of condoms, you know, and there was the 16-year-old daughter, red-faced, on the other side. There was no mother in the picture, no other female in the picture, so it was a bit of an awkward situation.
Yes.
Funny in hindsight, but I guess not funny at the time.
Yes, I bet you can go home and tell many, many stories.
Yep.
So, Patrick, time has run out. Can you believe it? Time's run out for us while we're having so much fun. Patrick, I must say thank you for all these awesome, awesome tips. It's always nice as listeners, and I mean, we just household people. It's always so nice to know these things. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. So before you go, we just need to let everybody know that Patrick Condoran Plumbing is a member of the False Bay Business Network as well.
Yeah, quite correct.
So you want to share, are you happy to share your contact number?
Sure, it's 021-782-4411.
And just a word out there, if you don't know and you don't know how,
call your friendly plumber.
Call your friendly plumber. And Patrick is willing to be on hand for you.
100%.
Do you charge for call-outs before we go, Patrick? Do you charge for call-out?
Yeah, we have an hourly rate and then a small fee for a call-out as well.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming in, sharing this knowledge and expertise. It was awesome.
Thanks, GDC. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye.
Cheers.
That DIY feature was brought to you by Paintsmiths Long Beach. Service and knowledge. With pleasure. I visit Paintsmiths for all things paint and revamp.
I visit Paintsmiths for trade and paint contractor advice.
And we are here for each individual or business in the valley. Service and knowledge. With pleasure. Paintsmiths Long Beach. Bulalo Drive, Sunnydale.